9. By 11, the fire looked over itself. The looky-loos had left. Firefighters were wrapping up, their portable lights still bright. A few badges remained along the drive and down at the pond, maintaining a perimeter. Eager to inspect the fire ground, I crossed the drive and went back up the front slope where Hollenbeck gazed toward the pond. A line jumped between his brows. I cleared my smoke-raw throat. Still no word on Smith's pickup? They checked his usual beer stores, I take it, and pals or associates.
First places they looked. The cafe and the store, too. No one there saw him or the truck.
Almost like he set the fire himself, I offered. Like he jacked up the property insurance and gave himself alibis for being gone when everything lit up. The family allegedly owes his father big time. Of course, I'll check all the financials and his business associates.
Jacked up insurance to cash in when the place blows up? Oldest motive in the book.
For sure. Okay to work the garage? I eyed the sodden black structure.
Be my guest, he said with a courtly bow.
Looking ridiculous given all his gear. A Michelin cartoon man trying to appear elegant, which he partly succeeded at. Fire hoses were going back into trucks, and firefighters looked like they were about to. A few engines pulled out. I heard yelled goodnights. They'd left the lights on for me and a guard. Light also lit the windows of the motorhome below the house. Know if the family will be allowed to stay in the motorhome or drive it somewhere?
That's being discussed. It might stay without them. Police went through it to look for Smith, but probably will want it empty so they can process it thoroughly.
I noticed louder noise and more activity at the irrigation pond. Lights, police units, and deputies. Shouting, arm waving, radio noise. What was going on? Had they found someone? Another witness? Like a farm visitor harvesting hemp on the sly? Pumps were going full blast to empty the pond into long furrows along hemp rows. The plants themselves bobbed, but some still resembled bristly, four-foot soldiers at attention. As Hollenbeck walked away, his radio spat out crackly words. I only made out body and going in. Body? As in dead? He turned to look at me. His worry line deepened. Taking a few steps down the slope, angling for a better view, he stopped and planted his hands on his hips. A chill swept me. A squirt of bile burned my throat, like before my mirror girl appeared. What happened? I hollered. I heard body on the radio, but my signal's wonky. His voice turned husky.
Police say there's a body.
Whose?
We'll know soon.
Firefighters had full lights and rescue apparatus at the pond. Ropes, straps, hooks, and a gurney, assisting police with recovery. I got investigating tools from my truck. Ditching my jacket and bunker pants, I pulled coveralls over my slacks and shirt and popped an acid from my stash in the door cubby. The medical vans had gone. A new one, its siren silent, but lights flashing, crept up the drive. It stopped by the fence close to the pond. Not far behind, a black sedan glided to a stop. The medical examiner had wasted no time. My eyes closed with sick knowing. Dogs barked in the distance. Radios jabbered close at hand. Lights blazed all around, but shone brightest around the pond. An officer trudged up to the motorhome. The door flew open. People and dogs spilled out, but were waved back. Shouts and sobs riddled the night. Could it be the body of Smith, the missing grower, that responders were recovering? That cast a harsh new light on things, whether the fire and body had anything to do with each other. I drew a ragged breath, letting it out in slow counts. Fire that destroys homes and livelihoods, businesses, was shocking enough, but death at a fire? It carved a cavern in your heart. One you could fall into any time without warning. This had better not be a kid or other family member. It was going to be a long night. I waved at Hollenbeck. Let me know when there's more. Going to work. While the drama below unfolded, I spread a tarp at the garage threshold. On it went tools, markers, containers, tongs, tweezers, hammer, steel, ruler. The knife on my belt to cut wood and drywall. Plastic gloves to protect evidence and fingers. I sketched, jotted notes, shot photos and video. Lifting an empty gum pack off weeds by the garage, I heard more noise at the pond. Keep to the work. You'll learn soon enough what's happening down there. Starting at the garage front left corner, I proceeded in a grid pattern. I crept back and forth in slush, shoveling, writing, leaving markers at certain debris, bagging some, sifting through stanky garbage for investigator gold. That was the part of the job I loved, assembling puzzle pieces, entertaining hunches, envisioning how it went down. Mom had Sarah and I work puzzles around Christmas. Mom screamed when I stuffed jigsaw pieces in my mouth. "Stop, stupid! You'll choke! Spit those pieces out!" She'd pry open my lips to snatch the pieces, her words stabbing like daggers. She often said things that made me feel dumb and unworthy. One reason I lavished attention on Jeremy, he would never feel unloved. But when all those long-ago puzzle pieces fit together, they formed wonderful pictures, towering mountains, flowers and birds, cozy fires and forest camps. I'd imagine myself in the settings for days, dream about them, but also nightmare about pieces that went missing. I wasn't responsible. I came across the mini Barbie again. She could belong to one of the hemp farm kids, but none seemed the type to play with dolls, except maybe the little boy. I named the doll Cindy. She was found among cinders and stuffed her in a pocket. My mouth was ash. I returned to my truck for a water, heartburn pill, and protein bar. At a fire, you never knew when you'd eat again. I was glad I could eat and hoped Jeremy was full of food and tucked in snug at Gammy's. The action still raged down at the pond. I felt echoingly alone. But that was typical for a job where loss and death sometimes made you feel cut off from life. Deputy Connor stood with the family at the motorhome. The girl was crying. Was it the grower they'd found? I wondered if Jeremy would understand if I were missing or dead. Sarah and I did when Mom died. Gammy said she'd gone to live with the Creator. I ached to join her. Keep to your work. You'll know soon enough. The insurance investigator called back. Matthew Court said he was out of town, but that he'd come tomorrow morning. Inching my way through the garage, using a magnifying glass, filling sacks and cans with a metal chip or utensil here, burnt hairs and yellow gelatin there, I verified the fire, or at least the explosion, likely started by someone cooking hash oil, but I'd leave the electrical box to experts in that field. I texted Gil Saylor, an electrician I knew, to take a look tomorrow. I had good guesses on the fire points of origin and cause, and he'd help verify them. Whether the fire was accidental or intentional was another matter. I reviewed how honey oil was made. Simmer marijuana buds in solvent to extract hallucinogenic THC. Cook off solvent, leaving the air thick with fumes, but making gold goo to smoke or vape. To sell, you must be licensed. Smith wasn't. Inside the blackened mini fridge, I found only sodas and one tin of product, suggesting cooking was a hobby rather than full-on lab. But the cooks could have just sold the inventory. I saw no fire trailers, signs of accelerant, or flame-feeding chimneys. I did find the word mayhem scrawled in red on what was left of the workbench. This was all of it. Floating on slush under the workbench were two partly melted pieces of black plastic that didn't match anything else. Could have been a cell phone. On the floor, I found a beat-up 6-volt battery that may have sat on the bench, and chunks that possibly belonged to another battery. A closer look revealed a tinfoil-wrapped wire sticking from the first battery's terminal. Bingo! Wired battery, parts of a cell phone beside the hot plate. The blast certainly could have been intentional, the setup primed to spark. I considered another explanation. Maybe the cooker was talking on the phone, dropped it on the hot plate. But with how the battery was wired near hot plate and pot, I liked intentional. Criminals did such things all the time to cash in on insurance, destroy evidence of wrongdoing, frame people, even kill them. I gathered more evidence to complete the picture puzzle of how the fire started and where it ran, maybe even to finger the perpetrator. Seeing a smoke-free spot on the fridge, I took out my powder and gel sheet and lifted a partial fingerprint. Did it belong to the grower, a family member, worker, or outsider? Police would take prints of farm residents to compare. Everything would go to a state police lab in Central Point or Salem. Be torture waiting to prove my idea this fire was intentional. I'd worked a ton of small cases, but solving a big one would make the boss proud he promoted me. A feather in his cap, so to speak, and a win for women and other marginalized souls. Make it easier to open doors to top titles. This fire cause couldn't be undetermined. I died to know about the body in the pond, but had muted my radio so I could concentrate. Now, I turned up the volume, but just heard random shouts and mutters. With the air still funky, I went to my truck for hits from my air tank, then returned to the garage to study the edges of the hole in the back wall. Explosion marks fanned out from what once was workbench. A window was blown away. Flaming debris must have hit the covered walkway, continuing to the house. I even gathered curled and blackened motocross photos. It was well after midnight when I collected evidence from the walk and back porch. At one, I heard running engines and crunching gravel. Two departing units turned onto the road. Hollenbeck trudged back up the hill. "Hey," he said. I set pieces of burnt glass on the evidence tarp. "What happened down there?" He grimaced.
"You probably saw the ME come. They found the grower, badly burned, partly submerged with a bullet in his head. But, if you can believe it, still alive."
"Really? Still alive?"
"By a thread."
"What about his truck?"
"Still missing. Police are all over that."
"Whoever set the fire and shot him probably took the truck."
"Be my thought."
I folded my arms. "How's the family?" He shook his head.
"Not good. Girlfriend left in the ambulance with the guy." "I'm about to leave. Tech's done for now, but be back at it for a slight. Find anything interesting?"
"A lot. Plus a gun pack by the garage, on weeds like it was tossed recently." He rubbed his jaw.
"None of our people chew gum that I'm aware of."
The reality of the tragedy buckled my knees. They found not a body in the pond, but a person, miraculously still alive. The grower with a bullet to the head. I choked back a sob.
"Kenton?"
Hollenbeck said, touching my arm.
"You okay?"
I straightened, locked onto his gaze. "I'm going to the hospital soon as I finish here to check on Smith. If he regains consciousness, he might talk to police." He shook his head.
"He's not coming awake anytime soon."
"Yeah, okay, I'm heading to the house."
"Touch base tomorrow. Feel better. Text if you find anything."
He handed over his card. Inside the house, with portable spotlights shining on burned walls, floors, and ceilings, I took carpet and wall samples, collected shards, drew diagrams, followed burn trails from the broken kitchen window, then processed the bedrooms, dining area, and attic. It was a slog through mush, shingles, and splintered wood. At 2:30, I put away gear, satisfied with evidence on the tarp. Most responders were gone except for the guard here and Tex at the pond. Taking a water bottle from my truck and sponging my dirty face, I saw lights in Lucy and Ron's living quarters horse trailer across the drive. So, they were staying. Someone was sure to ask why I hadn't waited until dawn to process the fire ground. But I wanted to get in while things were hot. Ash and debris always had hot spots that could smolder if left a while. Wreck evidence. I headed to the pond where techs were wrapping up. 40 feet away, I caught my toe on a rock, stumbled and fell. Before rising, I trained my headlamp beam on weeds and stones. Beside one sharp rock lay a brass shell casing. A very large shell casing.